Vanderjam.
Call me Juliet and call him the Technodromeo. Good morning! It's the Vanderjam. As always, it's me, Mayor Howard Vander. And as always, you can find me living over on Twitter at Vander_IAM. Coming to you with another episode of the Vanderjam, continuing the beautiful inertial momentum and indeed the good vibe fueled by you, dear listeners. First and foremost, beloved shout out to everyone in the Jam Nation who keeps this thing going, anyone who has donated their time, and more importantly, their cold hard cash. We have a special guest with us tonight. I believe third timer on the show, Twitter celeb these days, soup featurer, and all around a wonderful guy. We are here with you, Twitterly. We are here with the one and only Fredo Fabrucci. We decide to shake off some bad vibes that are going on in life in the world and revel in positivity. And we have a surprisingly long and serious discussion of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But in talking about these ridiculous fellow Italian countrymen to Fredo, we end up talking about the subject of nostalgia more broadly. It opens up some interesting spaces, and we reckon with our own fond memories of childhood, while at the same time talking about how awesome Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was across many different iterations and franchises. I hope you enjoy the episode that follows. I know that I certainly did, and I loved this conversation. I love every conversation with Fredo. All guests are special. Fredo is a genuine, real one. Go smash follow, and may your day be free of sorrow. I'll be back before long. I like being here, and hopefully you like being here too. Most of all, I hope you enjoy what you're about to hear. Till next time! Alright, gang. Tonight we got something a little special on our hands. We're not talking to one of your average lobies. We got a bona fide celeb with
Come on, man!
That's right, the force majeure of soup du jour. We are sitting down with the one and only Gentleman Kong, Fredo Fabrucci. Fredo, welcome back to the Vanderjam.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. You flatter me so much. Folks are going to look me up and be like, what the hell are they talking about? He's got like 7,000 followers. But yes, I'm
more than huge, extremely popular.
Yeah.
You've lapped me like the lovely people on the internet can lap up your soup related content over at UTWITILY on Twitter. UTWIT, I love you, right?
That's right. UTWITILY, UTWIT, I love you.
Yeah, I always think of it as utwittily, but that's not how it's spelled. Listen to Fredo. He knows where to find his account. So right now, set in the Mind Palace, it is now 8:24. On a Tuesday night, what are you up to, my good sir?
Well, we were chatting about this before. I have been back on a Ninja Turtles kick lately. And right before recording, I was playing the Super Nintendo version of Turtles in Time on the Cowabunga Collection. And I've really been digging all the stuff in that collection. I have a lot of nostalgia for most of those games, although I did miss the original window on some of them, which we can chat about in a sec. But yeah, I've been just enjoying this nostalgia. I've also been watching the new show, actually, from like a couple years ago. And
there's
it rocks.
A new Ninja Turtles show.
Yeah. It's on Nickelodeon, which I think is why I like missed it. I heard about it.
I think I missed it because I'm 36 and I have a day job.
Well, I'm even older, but I'm you know, an old fan of Ninja Turtles. And I remember hearing about it because I want to say like maybe Laird. One of the guys was at like a convention I went to and talked about it, and
because
they
it was
showed.
Laird and Eastman,
Yes,
right?
Eastman and Laird are the original two guys, and I think it was one of them, along with like a couple of the folks that worked on the new show, were doing like a panel together, and showed some stuff from it, and it looked great. And then I just, kind of forgotten about it over the years, and then playing this collection, there's a bunch of stuff. There's like stills from every TV show, and I had completely forgot. Like,
Okay.
oh yeah, there was that 2018 show where the turtles are all different species, so they look really
Wait,
different. Yeah.
what?
Yeah, so they're
How can
different
they
kinds
be
of
different
turtles.
species?
Yeah,
It's
well, they're different
Ninja
kinds of turtles. Like, they're all
Turtles.
turtles, but they're different kinds of turtles. So they have like different markings, and Raph is a lot bigger than the other three because he's like an
But
alligator turtle or something.
Oh, come on. What are the odds that there would be three normal turtles and then an alligator turtle? Like,
Well,
it's already.
the other three are different too. Like, Donatello's a soft shell turtle. I forget what Leonardo and
Why would they make
Michelangelo.
him a soft shell turtle? He loses his tactical advantage.
It's part well, it's funny that you mentioned that because that is one of the plot points in the show. Because
Oh,
Donatello's a
man.
tech guy, so part of what makes him like what he is that he's got all these
Yeah.
like
Leonardo
cybernetic
leads,
shells.
Donatello does
He does
machines. Right.
machines, and all of his shells are like these back, like they've got jetpacks and spider limbs and all this cool shit built in, and he can
Okay.
like throw one off and summon another one. Like, Donatello actually does
Oh
really cool
wow.
stuff
So it's
with his
like
shells.
the Extremis suits in Iron Man.
It's just they basically made Donatello like an Iron Man type character on the show, and it's
Holy
great.
shit, that is cool.
Yeah, it's
Donatello
awesome.
as glass cannon. It's amazing. Okay, so that's maybe let's wind it back to the beginning.
Yes.
Laird
I know that's
Eastman.
not.
Cowabunga Collection, as I haven't played it, but I gather it's a compilation of the NES and Super NES games based on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or for our UK listeners,
Hero Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Of course,
Like that
we're
very
Michelangelo
bizarre
and a crab.
joke book that I found. Did I read that to you on a previous episode?
Of a Ninja Turtles joke book?
A Hero Turtles joke book. And so it's British, so some of it doesn't make sense.
It does sound familiar, but I can't, that it might have been an episode I
Okay.
listened to rather than one I was on, but it
The
does sound
one that
familiar.
I do definitely remember is why did the depressed man jump down the manhole?
Okay. Why? Why did he?
He wanted to commit suicide.
Oh
And it's
boy.
like, so that gets past the censors, but you can't call them ninjas. What a country. So yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, for the absolute uninformed, Fredo, age before beauty, you tell the good kids listening to this show, who are the Ninja Turtles? What are they all about?
I will be happy to do that. I will also clarify because I know that some folks are already writing angry letters. The collection also includes arcade and Genesis games, so it's not
Oh,
just Nintendo and
nice.
Super Nintendo. But anyway,
Because I remember
so.
Turtles in Time had slight but appreciable differences.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and both versions are on here. So you can play the arcade version, which is
Sick.
way more of a quarter muncher game, much more sort of difficult, and the Super Nintendo
Real
version, which, as you
QM.
say, sorry?
A real QM, as they say.
Oh yes,
Qu quarter
absolutely.
muncher.
Yes, it is a QM.
Yeah.
So it's part of what makes it so neat is that yeah, you can check out like different versions of the same game and how they tried to like approximate the arcade game and the original
That's really
NES.
cool.
Yeah, it's a
Like,
lot of fun.
I'm trying to think of other games where the home release was just radically different from the arcade one. Michael Jackson's Moonwalker was one, because the arcade was completely different than the Genesis one.
Oh yeah, the arcade game was oh, excuse me. It was one of those like trackball games, right? Because it was like an isometric game and
It
you
was
would.
isometric. You could be one of three Michaels. It was three
Yeah.
player co-op. Yeah, I'm like it. I think it played out more like a scrolling shooter in some ways, And then the Genesis one, well, you're fighting dogs and like kicking open the trunks of cars and rescuing kids inside.
Yeah, they're radically different games. I mean, the Genesis version rocks. This is neither here nor there, but
That soundtrack, man, is great,
great.
especially on the Genesis sound chip.
Yeah, I mean, there's oh God, we could get into all sorts of like Michael Jackson Genesis stuff because he was apparently like a big Sega guy and like worked on the Sonic 3 soundtrack and all this
Yeah, and
nuts.
apparently that was actually like canon confirmed.
Yes, it came out like later from I forget. I'm sure there are other Sonic fans that like remember those details better, but I do remember hearing about all of that.
Yeah, because it's one thing when it's like Tomb Raider has a dude code, or there's a Simpsons mode where they say the F word, that are just like the cultural mythos. It's rare but cool when they are actually proven to be true.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a rumor for a long time because there are a bunch of songs in the game that sounded like B-sides. Like, I want to say the Ice Cap Zone song was basically like a Michael Jackson song. So it had been
Yeah,
rumored
Michael
forever.
Jackson's pop ballad, The Ice Cap Zone.
Yeah, the Ice Cap Zone, the famous.
Yeah. Ice Cap Zone is not my love.
I don't
Level.
think
I
Billie
should
Jean
have
made the
said
cut.
level.
Yeah, not my level. There you go. So
It's
God,
just
what
a
I
game that thinks that I'm player one.
there you go. There you go. See, this is why
Sega instant fun.
the instant classic.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, so Ninja Turtles, because you asked me originally how to
Yes.
explain Ninja Turtles. So a popular cartoon when I was a kid, based on originally the comic, was a parody of Daredevil and
Yes.
what I because I want to say they were doing a few things that were popular at the time. So like Teen Titans, I think, is where the teenagers comes from.
And
Daredevil's
I
with the
think there's Frank Miller's what is it, Ronin, his Cyber Samurai book that's not all that great. There's a rising sort of Japanophilia in comics art.
yes, you know that's right on because from what I understand, Eastman and Laird, the original two creators, were taking like a bunch of stuff that was sort of fashionable in comics at the time, and doing kind of their own take slash parody of it. So like the Foot Clan was supposed to be a take on the Hand from Daredevil. Master Splinter was supposed to be like Master Stick. Yeah,
Stick,
probably got.
splinter, hand, foot. Oh my God, that's like
Yeah,
House and Sherlock
That
Holmes.
Ronin, yeah, I'm sure all that stuff like played into it. But yeah, it's
Casey Jones is standing for Phil Esposito.
I don't know what I mean, Casey Jones, I wonder if it was just like, yeah, I don't know. Like was
It's
maybe
like,
the hockey
I wonder
mask
why
was
they
like Jason?
introduced a skateboarding cool punk guy in a fashionable product for young people in the 90s.
Well, because Casey Jones was the sports, the hockey slash
Yeah,
everything guy.
he
The
was the
turtles
Wayne
were the
Gretzky's
skateboarders.
Pro Stars of comic
There
characters.
you go. Yes, Pro Stars with Wayne Gretzky and was it Bo Jackson? Who was the
Bo
other?
Jackson and Michael Jordan,
And
I
Michael
think.
Jordan, but Michael Jordan was like not on there as because I remember they used to have the little intros and it was always like Gretzky and I think Bo Jackson, but not Michael
Yes.
Jordan because he's like too
Cole
big time.
Wayne, he's always available. It's like, why did we sign Michael? His team makes the playoffs every year, and that's another 2 weeks we can't use him.
It is a peculiar. I mean, I would have guessed Gretzky was considered, just as big a star in hockey, but I guess hockey just wasn't as big or whatever.
Well, Wayne Gretzky, though, as a person, because I grew up watching hockey, Wayne Gretzky as a person isn't necessarily like he's just a humble guy from like Ontario or whatever. And so, like they give him this cartoon character, but he, unlike someone like Deion Sanders or even Barry Bonds, like he doesn't have that outsized persona. It's just, hey, everybody, I'm Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
I think hockey is an important part of Canada's tradition of excellence. It's just, I don't know. You can't imagine him like having a crippling pill addiction, or him like wrecking an SUV or something, or making tabloid material. Isn't there like a Sears catalog where he's modeling socks in front of the fireplace?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he's one of those. I don't know very much about athletes in general, but he is one of those like famously wholesome. At least that was the impression I got. Athletes.
Yeah, it's you never know what happens behind the subaltern, though, and that's where we encounter the foe to the Ninja Turtles, the Shredder.
Oh yes, now Shredder. Fun for those.
Oh wait, we forgot to explain who the Ninja Turtles are.
Yeah. Okay. So the Ninja Turtles. This is where it gets confusing because there's different origin stories based on like which comic continuity and the movie continuity and the show continuity. But generally, they are four actual turtles that got mutated by like the ooze.
The baby turtles.
Yes, they just. And Splinter, their master slash father figure, is a rat. But with Splinter, yep. They go back and forth on whether he was a rat that got mutated by the ooze or whether he was a human that was turned into a rat mutant. In the cartoon, it was the latter. In the movies, it was the former. And I think the original comic story was that he was like the pet rat of like a kung fu master that got
transformed. Yeah, because he watched the moves, right?
And yes, and he learned that's exactly. Master. He learned because his cage was like next to the dojo floor.
Yeah, and after he kills his master, Rat Splinter like jumps and claws at Shredder's face, and that's why he wears the mask.
Well, that was what it was in the movie. I don't know.
In the movie.
I don't know how
like,
much of that
it's
was.
Also, I remember when the movie came out, it is a decidedly more close to the comics in terms of tone. The subsequent ones become very much like Turtles the brand, Turtles the cartoon. But I remember watching the first one a couple years ago and being like, this is surprisingly grim. Most of it is Raphael being like film noir guy. But well, the four central turtles, though, they are raised by Master Splinter and they become unique individuals and martial artists named after, is it the classical masters of painting?
Yes, Italian Renaissance. That's Leonardo, Raphael, Michelangelo, and Donatello.
Okay, so as per the song, Leonardo leads blue one.
The blue one.
Donatello purple does machines bow staff. Raphael, Psy, red, is cool, but is it rude or crude?
Cool but rude, yeah, cool but rude.
Michelangelo, yellow nunchucks, is a party dude, and that summarizes all you need to know.
Yeah, I mean that's your sort of one line intro to each of them. Fun little fact, by the way. In the original comics, they didn't even have different colors; they were just all red, and then they changed.
Oh wow.
Yeah, they changed them to be color-coded. I believe that was for the TV show, but then that just became, you know, that became this sort of fundamental characteristic that was represented later in the comics and other places.
Well, let me also put it to you this way, going back to merchandising. sellable youth properties. Let's have one doll we can sell versus four dolls.
Now you're getting it. Now you're getting it. Shout out to my buddy Sal that used to work for the company that made the Halo toys because there was a lot of, you know, the blue Spartan, the red Spartan.
More like all a that stuff. Halo of toys.
Wait, sorry. What was that?
A Halo of toys.
Oh,
and I think your stunned silence just made
awful.
It
yeah, awful. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. I was like, yeah. Oh, Halo toys. Yeah.
I was waiting for the other shoe to fall. Yes. No, so like, it's funny though, because, you know, Ninja Turtles was inescapable as kids, whether you saw it in the movie or especially the cartoon show.
Yeah, it was a
people
mega
don't
huge.
Remember how much they remember because of depending like what early year they were sitting in front of the TV watching Ninja Turtles. I think most people in our age, if you played like a season's worth, there would be something everyone's like, I remember this.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, it was you're right, it was inescapable, because even if you didn't care for the TV show or whatever, like the video games were in like every arcade and bowling alley. There was merchandise everywhere. The toys were some of the most popular toys. They
Yeah.
were on
There's a
t-shirts and
functional
stuff.
arcade near my house, and one of the machines they have is the Nickelodeon TMNT.
The Nickelodeon one. So is there
Yeah,
like
it's like
a newer
cell
game?
shaded. Yeah,
Okay.
it's done like a partial CGI kind of style. It
I know
sort
the
of.
one. It's one of the PS2 era ones, I would guess. I remember those like cell shaded, like action games. I just didn't know there was like arcade versions of any of those.
Yeah, apparently so. There's
Oh,
also an
interesting.
arcade game that's soccer, and the controller is a ball you can kick with your foot.
I've heard of that, but not. You don't mean there's a Ninja Turtles version of that game, is there?
There is not yet,
Not
but
yet.
I
I mean,
mean, it's conceivable. Shaolin Soccer Ninja Turtles crossover. Book it.
I would absolutely. I mean, I'm a sucker for Ninja Turtles. I'll check out any Ninja Turtles thing.
So,
And
what is it that you like so much about Ninja Turtles, aside from nostalgia?
yeah. Well,
Fine if it is purely nostalgia, but is there something more as an adult that you still derive so much enthusiasm for? It's good to be enthusiastic.
I think that's a great question, and it's something I've been kind of grappling with recently because I've been watching the new show, and we could talk more about that in a sec. But like, there's the sort of fundamental, like, it's kung fu cool action stuff, and I'm a fan of those kinds of like martial arts movies and stuff. So it's neat to have like a TV show about these like stealthy ninja fighter badass characters.
Yeah.
I like how each of them has like a different characterization that gets explored, and watching the new one especially, it feels like they're going for this very sort of a wholesome, like, oh, everybody you know is kind of like one of these turtles. It's the Donatello's like the guy you know that's
We
really.
lost it all on crypto.
Oh man, I wonder if they're gonna make like a joke about Donatello losing his money in crypto. The new one definitely has that sense of humor. But yeah, I don't know. I
Hear
always
me
thought the
out.
characters were
Ninja
fun. I always thought the
Fungible
fighting's.
Turtles.
Sorry?
Ninja Fungible Turtles.
Oh man. Oh man. I really hope. Please don't manifest this into existence. I hope there's never going to be like
Printed.
Ninja
It's
Turtles
done.
NFTs.
We just spoke it into the world. It has to happen now.
The good people at Nickelodeon, who I believe those are the current owners of Ninja Turtles. Please just don't do it.
Yes.
But
You're
I
asking.
enjoyed the fighting in the ninja stuff was cool because like ninjas were cool as a little kid, and I think they're still cool now. I like the characters. I thought they were fun, like really creative enemies like Bebop and Rocksteady, who were this pig and rhino man mutant guys
Was
that
it Warthog?
yeah, Bebop was like a warthog guy
Or a
and
boar?
Rocksteady was a
Yeah.
rhino.
And yeah, they Bebop looked a lot like Jerry Sags from the Nasty Boys.
Oh yeah, he kind of did, didn't he?
Like a lot like it. If you're gonna look it up, you will see I speak only truth.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be entirely outside the realm of plausibility that, you know, the character was based on, you know, somebody knew him or whatever. I think, right? Because I want to say, well, actually, I'm not sure which one
I mean, the
predates.
Hulkster's fingers are
Are
everywhere.
all over, yeah. And
Yeah.
it does kind of have. I'm a big wrestling guy as well, and it does have a sort of wrestling-esque, over-the-top nature of like the gimmicked characters, all these different weird mutant animal
Well, it's also
adversaries.
every single character and every single frame of what it is instantly readable. Like it's there's no gray and gray morality. It's very clearly in color code. Like, who's the good guy here? The stern turtle issuing the right plan to his fellow turtles, or that hideous monster thing that's snarling at them? You know, and that's not to say it's a bad thing. Like,
Bart says that wrestling works because every moment of it is instantly readable in terms of, like, narrativity and classic performance.
Well, you know, you hit on something really interesting there, because I think one of the reasons that I was maybe drawn to it as a kid and I found it so interesting is there is that imagery that the enemies are definitely, like, more monstrous and gross. But a part of it is supposed to be that the turtles, you know, the heroes, they are like weird monsters and people are afraid of them. But they're good guys.
And their disguise is just them wearing trench coats and hats.
Which is very, very fun. They make a joke about that on the new show, where there's several times. There's a neat thing in the new show where there's this whole, like, kind of secret society of mutants operating in the fringes of society. So they're, like, instead of, like, every mutant being, like, a monster
villain. Like the Hellfire Club.
It kind of, like, there actually is, like, I forget if it's a pizza place or there's like, a sort of club/restaurant that's just like for mutants.
Okay, like Lucifer.
Yeah, it's like that, but it's all like weird mutants and monsters and stuff.
Now, not to cut you off, but have you seen the Those Turtles video?
No, what is this?
Okay, I just sent you a link on DM. It's a piece of internet lore, but it also involves the turtles in their disguises. Like, I guess what's surprising is that something that's so seemingly facile as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles sounds like it is not only capable of changing and adapting as a form, but doing so in a satisfying way. I was talking to a resident friend of the show, movie nerd, Karl Marx, and no, not the one. We're talking about the Halloween series and, like, how over time, every time they reboot it, it's to a different set of audience expectations of what horror film needs to be. And so the people making it are aware of that expectation, and they produce different takes accordingly. And it really eventually gets far afield from the fact that, like, Carpenter's film, the original, worked so well because it simply is what it is. It presents a situation, we get all the context that we need to know, and part of what makes it scary is that we don't have more than that, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not to say the further iterations don't have their merits, but it's very different. Whereas it seems with Ninja Turtles, it works more holistically as a universe.
That's an interesting... That's tricky, because I do feel like there's a lot of difference between the original comic and the original cartoon, and it feels like the various iterations they've done, like, there's definitely a lot of things they do have in common, but each of them seems to pitch a certain vibe that's closer to one or the other.
All right, give us some examples.
Like, I would say the mid-2000s show that was a little bit closer to, had more of a cel-shaded look, was a little bit closer than the 80s and 90s show to the comics. I don't know if you've ever seen, have you ever seen Turtles Forever? It rocks, by the way. Super.
I have not seen Turtles Forever. What's
so
that?
Turtles Forever was like a made-for-TV movie special that they did in, I want to say, the late 2000s, and the premise being the turtles from the original cartoon meet the turtles from the 2000s cartoon.
Yes.
And then there's a late game twist where both sets of turtles meet the original comic turtles. And there's this running gag, right, of, like, well, the 80s 90s turtles are, like, a lot goofier because it was a goofier cartoon, right? It was like an 80s 90s cartoon, and they almost never used their weapons, and they would fight very indirectly by, you know, knocking an enemy into, like, a mine cart and rolling the cart
away. You distract the Foot Clan, I'll disable Krang's machine,
right? Exactly. And then the 2000s turtles are always making fun of them for being, like, these kind of, like, goofball unserious kind of characters. And then, like, an hour
these guys don't even have a body count,
That is Cowabunga. That is exactly right. Like you won't even, you know, the new Leo was like, you won't even use your swords, you know, to like old Leo. Mm. But then it subverts that in an interesting way, where towards the end of the movie, you meet the original comic turtles, and the original comic turtles are fucking absolute killers. I mean, they like tear Shredder apart in the first episode of the comic, like repeatedly stabbed.
That's brutally insane.
Yeah, it's like a hardcore comic. So when those turtles show up, the 2000s turtles are like lame losers compared to them. They're making fun of them, you know, better. So it's really cool. It's really cool the way that they've kind of like acknowledged the different takes that they did in the past and how they differ from the original. And like the new show is another like new take as well. So I really dig it.
Well, like, personally, I thought No Way Home was very satisfying, and not just for nostalgia reasons. And I think it's the difference between, like, especially when you get into long-running franchises, you can do, like, the crossover, but there sort of needs to be a point, and the point can't just be everybody looking at the camera and say, remember? That's self-awareness.
Yeah, I agree with you. You have to like bring something to the table. And I thought that, you know, the new Spider-Man is a good example because they did some like interesting stuff with that character. They like de-aged him. They made him like back in high school. It wasn't an origin story. It was largely about how he's dealing with being a superhero in this world where there's also all these other superheroes that he like respects. I thought it was like a fun take. And I'm a Spider-Man.
And like, it's a take that makes sense and can only really exist after the MCU has become a thing, right?
Well, yeah, for sure.
Like, you can't make the Tom Holland Spider-Man film fundamentally, like, the same year that Tim Burton's Batman comes out, right? The same way that you can't make...
That would have been so...
Well, you can't make a Justice League film the same year Donner Superman comes out, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, those are all things that, like, movies are in a different place, and they require the context of the previous entries.
Exactly. Like, imagine Spider-Man just coming out, and it's like, I'm a kid, here are all these other people flying in and stuff. Like, the bigger the MCU becomes, like, the bigger so much of the narrative kind of coasts on the fact that you already know who these characters are.
Right.
Yeah, in a way that...
I mean, it is an established universe, right? So having an established universe lets you kind of get away with stuff that you maybe can't get away with in, you know, in a movie where you're building everything from scratch.
Well, yeah, so everybody razzes on Sam Raimi's Spider-Man because they're like, oh, it's too goofy and cartoony. It's like, it's instantly sensible. We very clearly understand not just who the good guys and bad guys are, but even the characters with, like, you know, yeah, James Franco is a prick because Harry's supposed to be. Yeah, Peter's kind of a mensch, but he is supposed to be, and
for sure,
we see him win, you know? Yes, there's a sinister side to Norman Osborn. He is played by Willem Dafoe.
He was great in that.
Yeah, and Spider-Man 2, I still watch it every now and then. It remains an excellent example of how to make a superhero film. It doesn't require a tie-in to anything else. It is about the nature and need for heroism itself while still being incredibly fun.
Yeah, I think those are great movies. Well, you know, like a lot of folks, I thought the third one had, you know, its flaws, but overall, big fan of the Raimi Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, the third one doesn't have that emotionally satisfying moment, right? Number one has the kiss. It has, I do have a father. His name was Ben Parker. The second one, everything about Dr. Octopus is emotional.
Yeah, he was great.
You got the union at the end, you know. Number three is just like, well, I guess we feel bad for Sandman's daughter.
Yeah, I feel like in three, they probably could have done more with the whole, because the whole black suit storyline is a famous comic storyline.
Yes, it is.
Bringing out certain emotions in Peter, and they tried to do that in the movie. It just...
It also gave us Maximum Carnage, the video.
Yeah, Maximum Carnage, which, you know, we got to revisit that in the recent Venom sequel with Woody Harrelson as Carnage.
Yeah, which I have not seen. I saw Venom and I'm like, it's fine. Like, I don't dislike it. It's perfectly good. Just don't really necessarily. I have no free time, man. I can't spend it all watching superhero movies.
Oh man, you gotta find the time. This is important stuff,
Yeah.
brother.
But like three has fun moments. Like, you cannot hate on a film too much if it features a scene of his evil self showing it by disrupting a piano jazz
Oh,
bar
for sure.
and
That stuff
yelling,
all
"Now
rocks. I
dig
mean, yeah.
on this." Like, Tobey Maguire's evil self yelling, "Now dig on this."
Yeah,
How do you not just die over it?
he was great. And now that you mention it, looking back on it, I mean, we did get like funny memes out of that sequence, and it is like in the spirit of the movies being a little bit more cartoony that like I think we maybe expected it to be a little different. Because I remember even in the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, the storyline with the black suit was like as grim and dark as that cartoon ever
Oh
got.
yeah, I remember that as a kid. And I remember vividly being so excited they were introducing Venom, because Eddie Brock was one of my favorites.
Oh yeah,
Sort
Venom
of the
was
same way, like, he is to Marvel what Two-Face is for me for DC, I guess, where not only is he the anti-hero more than he is a villain, but like as a mirror of the protagonist. And everybody hates on Topher Grace for being cast as Eddie Brock, but like,
He wasn't
I.
given much to do, you know. He wasn't given a lot to do anything with, you
Yeah.
know.
And that's the problem, because if they focus more of the film on that, it makes sense when you think of him being a counterpart to Tobey Maguire rather than him being Eddie Brock from the comics.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like in another universe where instead of trying to do Venom and Sandman in one movie, the black suit and Venom would have just been like a movie by itself. That
Well,
would have
yeah,
worked.
because they also retcon Uncle Ben's death, which we see on screen
Yeah.
happening differently 2 movies ago.
Yeah, it's from what I hear, it was the victim of executive meddling that they wanted to have
Absolutely.
Venom
I
be in
don't
the
think
movie, and yeah.
anyone was clamoring for a snowboard goblin glider. But, and that's the thing, though, because, like, even a concept like Ninja Turtles, like Spider-Man, yeah, there's an absurdity and like a, if you want to be like an objective realist, there's a ludicrousness at the heart of what these narratives are presenting
For
you.
sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But we can suspend disbelief and accept it up until a point, right? Like, we can accept Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus and him slowing down the speeding subway train, because that's delivered in a way that's satisfying. Whereas James Franco wearing like a domino mask and green body armor being like, "Peter, you were my best friend." Like the butler being like, "Your father loved you, Harry, and I love you too." It's those moments break it for us. Whereas Ninja Turtles, I mean, I remember, while it's not something I'm as well versed in, you, there was never that moment where I'm like, okay, now we're just getting ridiculous.
Well, I don't know. The Turtles in Time movie, the third movie, which was ostensibly
Oh, where they
based
go
on.
back to historical Japan.
Yeah, that was a pretty rough. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
I literally remember one thing about it. I saw it on my birthday 1 year in theaters, and there's the one point where the Japanese guy is yelling Kappa at them. He's Kappa! And Michelangelo's response is Cappuccino? No way, man. Makes me hyper.
Yeah, I take it back. Actually, that rocks. That movie was good. I'm gonna
Yeah.
correct.
I think it's a misunderstood classic based off that specific joke I remember.
I kind of want to rewatch it now. I remember it seemed noticeably cheaper than the previous ones too. Like they had cheaper, shittier suits and stuff.
Yeah. And it felt very much like kind of a Highlander progression. What about we start a podcast where we look at the different Ninja Turtles movies? Called Teenage Mutant Ninja Theorists.
Go on. Is it just breaking down the movies, or
Yeah, or just watching them and being like, man, It was pretty awesome when Donatello spun in the air and then hit the three guys with his bow staff.
There was a lot of cool stuff that scene. I forget if it was the beginning of the first movie or the second movie where Michelangelo's using the sausages as nunchucks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fighting in that, like, food court or whatever.
And they do their James Cagney impressions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of...
And Michelangelo sounds, like, weirdly Japanese.
I don't remember. Was he trying to do like maybe a dubbed kung fu actor type voice?
Maybe. I don't think he knew who James Cagney was. Which is possible, you know. Also, have you seen the original dub, the Streamline Pictures version of Akira?
I've definitely seen Akira, but I'm not, I want to see.
If you've seen it on tape, it's probably this one, because the same voice actor who does Leonardo in the 90s cartoon series.
Cam Clark, of course, he also voiced.
He is Lincoln. Also Kaneda.
Okay, yes, I have seen that, because I do remember... Okay.
Come on, Tetsuo, you'll never take me down.
That's right, and I will not suffer any ill will towards Cam Clark, who is amazing.
Yeah,
all the original...
voice acting.
Yes.
Everybody's great, that's why they get paid.
Yeah, they're all great. Rob Paulson is as Raphael, one of the all-time legends, absolutely.
I don't know him. He's no Lorenzo Music.
He's Yakko in Animaniacs.
Okay. I do know that.
Yeah, he's a super prolific voice actor. You've definitely heard a lot of stuff he's done. I'm trying to think of, like, what are his other, like, most famous roles. But he has like a distinctive voice that you'll...
Exactly. Yes, and with prolific voice actors, like, you hear it, and some people just from cadence, you're like, even if you don't know who it is, Keith David, visually and orally,
for sure,
is a complete through and through that guy. Jim Cummings, as a voice actor, once you hear him in anything, because he always kind of has like an underbite tonality. That's why he's Winnie the Pooh and shows up in Splatterhouse, but he's like, based with a human heart.
He's doing his Pete from Goof Troop voice. Yeah. In because he's also Pete from, you know, Disney.
Goof Troop, yeah. Makes
old
sense.
Hell Goof.
He was also Bumpin' the Night. Did you ever see that one?
Oh yeah, that was the like monster the claymation show, right?
Yes.
Yes,
my name is Mr. Bumpy. I go bump in the night.
Yeah, that's right. Wow, I'm getting real nostalgic this episode.
Yeah, it's last time we talked about Pirates of Black Water, so I guess we're
Dark Water. Pirates of Dark Water. Come
that's
on.
The one.
Yeah, that's the
I was
one.
Thinking about the evil private military corporation.
From that. In general, I don't even remember.
I mean, the Ninja Turtles themselves can be seen as a kind of urban guerrilla gang. Ironic, because they are of a wholly different species than gorillas.
That is true. And that is ironic in a way.
Now, Dr. Fabrucci, what do you think society needs to do in order to facilitate the turtles as an ally?
I feel like one of the things that the new show highlights very well is that the turtles have this like real genuine like goodness and earnestness to them. They are like extremely uncynical, and tend to sort of assume that other people are being earnest, and I think assuming that other people are not being earnest is one of those things that like makes folks more aggressive, less trusting, etc. So I think if we want to really embrace the turtles and show them that we are as good as they give us credit for, we need to be a lot more earnest and a lot less cynical. That's Dr. Fabrucci's take for you, brother.
True. Now, they say that, before you can judge a man, you must walk a mile in their shoes.
Right.
But
I throw a lot of stones, at glass houses.
Yeah. The problem is, Dr. Fabrucci, even if one agrees with your bold assertion there, these are neither men nor are they wearing shoes?
That is
to
true.
What degree, biologically, are we even capable of feeling empathy and compassion towards these, hell, I'll say it, these freaks of science?
Okay, well, little bit mean to call them freaks of science, although I do understand what you're saying. Because, yes, technically, unlike a lot of, I guess, mutant characters, the one of the things that's interesting about the Ninja Turtles is that they were never human. They were like pet turtle. They were like from a pet store or something. But they obviously have the like developed brains of humans, right? Like they're not... They don't really like process emotions fundamentally differently from the way people do. So they're for all intents and purposes, they are people. They just look different, right? There's nothing about like the way their brains biologically work. I mean, I know an actual turtle, there are differences, but not the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I think that like,
right,
yeah,
that's where the mutation comes in. It's
right.
A useful
basically
umbrella.
Humanoid. Yes. Humanoid. And that's a thing. Actually, if anybody that knows more about Ninja Turtles, could write in and let us know, because one of the, plot points you see a lot on the show is somebody else, like something or someone else will get mutated and they'll be like this giant, mindless monster like Toka and Rezar, for instance, in the movie.
Oh yeah,
the second movie.
They're basically like the gritty Bebop and Rocksteady analog, right? But they're
yeah,
not like wisecracking punk guys.
There was
monsters.
Some reason like they wanted, I think that they just didn't have the rights to those characters or something, so they had to like invent some new ones. But yeah,
imagine not having the rights to Ninja Turtles but having the rights to Bebop and Rocksteady.
Well, I think it might be because Bebop and Rocksteady were created for the show and the movie maybe had the comic license.
That happens every now and then, how like Marvel couldn't use Fantastic Four for the
longest
time.
It's a good example of exactly that same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's or like, and because they couldn't use Fantastic Four, they couldn't use the Skrulls. So
right.
You watch Avengers and you're like, well, I got a feeling I know what these guys are supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
They can't be that. And then it turns out that Disney just made enough money that problems went away over time.
They were just able to get it, and then they have to like... Yeah, find a way to weave in all of that stuff that they had to dance around before, which I know everybody is wondering, like, how are they going to finally pull the trigger on, like, X-Men and Fantastic Four and all that?
I think after a point, they're just going to be outright cynical and, like, X-Men just show up in a scene. They're like, hey, guys, we've been Avengers for a long time. That's right.
Oh,
you've always
wow.
been here.
That would suck a lot if they ended... If they just pretended like the X-Men have always been here. Look, it's our friend Wolverine. And he's just like,
hey, Wolverine,
you know,
it's me, Tony Stark. Hey, Tony, I remember helping you when Obadiah Stane tried to buy you out of your company.
They retcon Wolverine into the first Iron Man movie.
Well, I mean, he does live a very long time.
That's
and, like,
true.
Professor X is like, oh, hey there, Spider-Man. Remember that time that I helped you take down Michael Keaton? It's like, oh yes, now I remember. And there's a flashback.
They call
Professor
him
X
Michael
is just
Keaton.
Watching.
They refer to the actor's name for like they just go extremely like Deadpool style meta.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. And they look directly into the camera while smirking as they do it.
I mean, it works for Deadpool.
Does it?
Well, I think so. I think those Deadpool movies are fun.
I think it really depends on your tolerance for Ryan Reynolds' self-satisfaction.
Look, I get what you're saying because I know that, like, people doing the, like, Deadpool characters, like, a really overdone thing at, like, conventions and stuff. So I can definitely see how it would get tiresome, but
well,
I think...
But Deadpool can be done cleverly, and that's not to say that Reynolds doesn't occasionally do clever things in the movies. It's just... I feel like, regardless of output, it's done with an absolute confidence. Like, he already knows how funny this is. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't think you're clever enough to warrant that kind of, like, I don't know. You just look at a guy and know that he's a dick about his own performance.
You know, I
John Hamm is an asshole on sight. You know, you have to look at the man and hear him speak for 5 seconds before you just know it.
I've always heard he's a nice guy.
I've heard he's a horrible person.
Really? Oh, well, that's very interesting.
Huh. Well, apparently when Amy Poehler was getting divorced on SNL, he was like, look, I know you got a lot of shit going on, but this night's big for me. And, like, I don't know. He seems
seriously?
Like,
I never heard that story. That's
fucked
up. He seems
like a capital A actor.
All right. Well, that's not great. Ryan Reynolds, I think you need to go on the Jam and explain yourself.
Ryan Reynolds, fuck off. I don't want you on
the show. It could be a running gag where he's trying to get on the show, but you don't want him on the show.
I already have that. He's called Billy. Billy. It's just, I mean, like, honestly, maybe that's a bigger point. That Ryan Reynolds, it's cool that you want to be on the Jam, but it's not up to you.
That's
right?
True.
Mayor is not entitled to a lot of things, but this shit's mine. I'm the gatekeeper, and I'm allowed to be a dick about it. Go find your girl and another guy at a pizza place. Go bother somebody else. Wednesday is a date on ABC.
Wow, I had completely forgotten about that show. Because, that was
most
where
people did.
Yeah.
Oh, man, life really takes you places. Is he still married to Alanis?
Was he married to Alanis?
They were an item, at least. And then he was with Scarlett Johansson, Scarnolds.
I never pay attention to this kind of like celebrity relationship stuff.
I didn't know this stuff. I try not to pay attention to celeb talk now.
This is going back 100 years because I do remember the Dave Coulier from Full House and the guy that You Ought to Know was written about, but that's as far as my lore on that goes.
And drums on that track played by recently deceased Taylor Hawkins.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I knew him as Alanis' drummer before The Foo, because I'm that kind of cool kid.
Oh, yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. It's a jagged little pill to swallow, but you got to take that medicine, Doc. Physician, heal thyself.
Right, wow. You're really firing on all cylinders tonight.
Yeah, it's you bring it out of me, Doc. You giving me the juice. So Ninja Turtles Comeback Collection.
Cowabunga Collection.
Cowabunga Comeback.
Cowabunga Comeback, that's right.
All right, Cowabunga Comeback.
It is a comeback of sorts.
Yes, so walk us through what this is. Where does it start now that we understand these turtles proper?
Okay, so it starts with, that's a good chronologically, I'm not sure. I want to say maybe the NES game. It was either the original arcade game or the NES game came out first.
NES one, you remember two things if you ever played this game.
Oh,
the water level and that one jump in the warehouse.
Yep, that's exactly right. The jump that you had to walk across, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
I think the arcade, you know what? And actually, I've got the game here, and there is a whole museum in here, so I might actually be able to check and see which one of them came out first.
We're learning through technology.
We are learning through technology. So let's check. Let's see. The box on the original NES game by Ultra Games, of course, because they had a deal where any company could only put out a certain number of NES games per year. So Konami made a fake.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, did you not know about this?
No, I had never heard of Ultra Games.
Nintendo had a restriction that, like, if you were a developer or publisher, you could only put out, like, it was like six games or like some amount of games per year. But Konami was big and they wanted to put out more games. So they created Ultra Games as basically like a fake second company so they could release more games.
They made their own front developer.
Yes, they made a front developer. So here, by the way, I'm looking at, okay, I got 89 as the date on the NES Turtles game. And let's see, this game, by the way, it has like magazine ads, design documents. It's got like so much behind the scenes stuff on all these games. It's really interesting.
What's in the box, indeed?
Yeah, let's see let's see when the original arcade game. I want to say it was around the same time because I remember all of these from when I was a kid. Original arcade.
I have memories of the original arcade one, but I don't know if I actually played it. I was that kid who would always walk in the arcade and just sort of spectate. I don't know. Maybe I was hoping someone would give me quarters. Arcade, also 89.
Yes, both of them are 89. So the earliest two games on here are the original arcade game.
And it is developed by Konami proper.
Yeah, they are all developed by Konami, but a couple of the NES games were labeled Ultra
Game. It was the highest grossing arcade game of 1990 in the United States.
I believe it. It was a huge game. It was like that. Yeah,
Konami's highest grossing arcade game.
Yeah, it was a...
And then Turtles in Time, which is a scant 2 years later.
Yeah.
That's more or less a direct sequel to the arcade game.
Yes, that's correct. So most of the stuff here is a fairly narrow band of time. So you had that original 89 arcade game, you had the NES game, which was a totally different, you know, this weird side-scrolling game that definitely has a lot of, there's some interesting stuff in it, but it's definitely like a tricky, you know, early-ish NES game. Mm-hmm. Then there's Ninja Turtles 2 for the NES, which was a port of that 89 arcade game.
Okay, I thought so, because that one always played differently.
Yes, so instead of being like a 2D side scroller, it's a belt scroller, right? It's like a beat 'em up style game. Although, to make it work on the NES, they had to make a bunch of like weird concessions, so it controls like a little differently. The enemies get like big invulnerability windows when you try to hit them, so you have to like hit an enemy, then run away, then hit them again. It feels very unsatisfying compared to the actual arcade game, but it's an approximation, right? It's like the levels and the enemies from the arcade game.
Yeah, and that was something else that gamers of previous generations had to get used to. Hey, you liked Pit Fighter in the arcades? Well, go to hell. Here it is on Super NES.
Yeah, here's like a total piece of shit. Yeah, that's... It's an interesting game to go back and play because it's neat to see how they were able to approximate that kind of game on a system that was, you know, so much less powerful, but it's obviously way less fun. It's obviously like a way worse version of the game.
But that's the funny thing, because in 91 Japan, 92 it comes out in North America, Ninja Turtles 3, the Manhattan Project.
Now, Manhattan Project is
similar gameplay to the arcade one, but I remember that one very fondly, and it was a lot of fun. Maybe because they were developing it for the console rather than trying to approximate.
I think that's right on. So Manhattan Project is a fascinating game, and it's one that was like a blind spot for me because it came out so late on the NES. And yeah, it's structurally pretty similar to the second.
Yeah, because it's the last NES one too, right?
Well, it's a late, like Tournament Fighters was even later, but yeah, it's the last. We could talk about Tournament Fighters in a sec because that's another fascinating series. But you are right, like Manhattan Project is great. It's easily the best of those like original three Turtles games. I think it just didn't really get a fair shake because it came out so late in the Super Nintendo and Genesis were already out. It came out around the same time as Turtles in Time and Hyperstone Heist for the SNES and Genesis, which are also in this collection. A lot of people just kind of ignored it, but it's a great original NES game.
Yeah, how there was Star Tropics 2 in that, but it came out like literally 6 months before they discontinued the console.
It's super late, and Tournament Fighters. So yeah, Tournament Fighters is another like fascinating series, and that got versions on the Super Nintendo, the Genesis, and the original NES. All three of them were like pretty different games, and the original NES version, I want to say, was like Konami's last NES game, one of the last NES games. Period. It was like 93, 94, super.
Oh, wow.
Almost like the PlayStation era, so very, very, very late.
My God.
But it's also like good and interesting because like trying to do a street, it was like a Street Fighter clone, basically. So trying to do like a Street Fighter style game on the original NES, and they used this thing that's sort of like halfway between Urban Champion.
There's the Super version of Tournament Fighters, right?
Yeah, and the Super Nintendo and Genesis versions were closer to Street Fighter. It was like Street Fighter with Ninja Turtles characters. Less good, but that's what they were going for. And then the NES version was like, okay, we're going to try to do something like this on the original Nintendo, which obviously, technically, had nowhere near, you know, the capability to do that. So they did something really
Maybe
different.
Maybe the kids won't notice.
Well, I'm
the classic Nintendo Canard will make it really hard so we don't have to develop an ending.
I'm honestly pretty surprised they even made it, right? Because you would think that by then they would have figured like it's probably not worth it to like put something on the original Nintendo here, but they did. And it's also really good. Like Manhattan Project and Tournament Fighters for the NES, like both rock, and they're really underappreciated games because they came out like so. Like I didn't have an original Nintendo anymore by the time these games were out. So like, unless you
like
knew
most
someone
people
that,
have moved on to the new gen because especially with like on. Marketing for the console wars, it's like no, mom, dad, you don't understand. We have to get a Super Nintendo
for sure. I mean. I remember when Turtles in Time was like the super hot game, right? And then Turtles in Time came out on SNES, was a huge hit on SNES. And then in that same window, they were like, okay, let's do a Genesis game too. And they did Hyperstone Heist, which is this weird, it's got like some stuff from Turtles in Time, some stuff from the original arcade game. It's like this kind of Frankenstein game made with different
Turtles versus Frankenstein.
Different like bosses and levels borrowed from each of those games. And then I guess they
bury my shell at Wounded Knee.
Bury my shell at Wounded Knee, prehistoric Turtlesaurus, all that like weird shit. And I guess they had thought at the time, well, let's also do something on the NES and do Manhattan Project, which turned out to be great. And then another like 2-3 years later, because Tournament Fighters was like, it was a late game for the SNES and Genesis. So the fact that even in that window, they were like, let's put one of these out for the original Nintendo as well, was bonkers. I mean, it was already like almost bonkers for them to do it with Manhattan Project like a couple years earlier. But I guess it goes to show you like they really sold a ton of original Nintendos that they thought it was worth the investment.
Yeah, I remember actually looking up the other day what the relative sales are. The NES sold, I think, something close to 60 million units worldwide. The Super actually only sold like 45, and the 64 only sold, I think, 30. Meanwhile, you look at from the Wii, the DS platform in particular, these ones crack the 100 million sales mark. And it's interesting just to think that there was a time where, as they say, like Space Invaders was so popular in Japanese arcades, it caused a yen shortage. And you think about it, and it's like, in terms of like sales per unit, it's much less than what we see in the present, but there's a level of fevered engagement with the fandom that seems less common.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because, sure, most people you knew had a Wii, but you never really think about it as like, no, this has actually sold twice as many as the original Nintendo, whereas the original Nintendo has such a memory foothold in ways that Wii Sports Resorts does not.
Yeah, I get what you're saying because I think what happened is it just became more mainstream. So like I'm assuming that probably the attach rate is like lower now than it used to be of like how many games the average person buys with each console because they sell way more consoles these days. But the people that buy them, there's a lot of people that buy like a PlayStation and they get like one game a year or whatever, right? Yeah. Like back then, they maybe didn't sell as many like Nintendos as they sold Wii's, but the people that had a Nintendo were like more into it than the average person that had a Wii was into that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. And also the fact that, like, AAA development wasn't really a thing, aside from just what Nintendo did naturally, but they never framed it as AAA development. They just went ahead and did it. And it's like,
they just made better games. You know,
have a Mario game, and it is astonishingly complete, right?
Yeah, back then, most games really were similarly, low resources, right? Like whether it's Mario or Zelda or whatever throwaway game, most games had a crew of maybe a dozen people working on them. They would turn them around in like a year or two, and some of them would turn out great, and some of them would turn out not so great. And that's just the way it was. I mean, it's not like now where you have this like tier of games that have hundreds and hundreds of people working on them, and they cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're expected to sell, eight figures worth of copies to make up for those development cycles. I mean, yeah, you're right. That is like a modern thing.
Well, it also takes so much longer. And now when games come out, they're $90 on the first day. Yeah. Whereas certainly I remember Super NES games, like especially like the Nintendo developed ones being pricey as a kid. But, also with the NES, there was just such a glut of games available in the marketplace that, okay, well, this game kind of sucked, whatever. I'll spend $20 and get Rainbow Islands and hope for the best.
It was definitely that pre-internet era of games was an interesting one because... Yeah. Was harder.
Well, there's some gems there too, and
for sure.
But there was also this assumption as a gamer and a consumer that when I press power, this game very well may be impossible and broken shit, and that's kind of on me. Whereas, we have a very different relationship, not just to the gaming experience, but to the very act of or the view of ourselves as gamer consumers, like. Mass Effect 3 and the ending pushback that absolutely would not have happened if they bricked up the ending of Final Fantasy 6, right? And not just because they couldn't give you DLC back then.
No, yeah, it was a different culture. And not to mention, you're talking about in that era, as I've realized playing through these old Ninja Turtles games, Final Fantasy VI was not that far outside of the era of games where you would beat a game and you would get one screen. It's like, congratulations, the heroes are successful, and that's the ending. You know, there wasn't.
Congratulations. Thanks to play.
For great game, where that Ghostbusters, right? Congratulations. You have completed great game or whatever it is.
You have proved the virtue of our culture.
Yeah, it was like game endings were basically nothing. You know, they were like, if you were lucky,
we're
going to
slot in
like
a screen. And so every 20 levels you beat of the same layout, you get this screen.
Yeah, it felt like it was really, in the PS1 era, you started to get more like narrative games and expectations really started to become higher for endings, right? Because remember playing...
I think JRPGs also, just given the way that they are designed, they're allowed to be narrative focused and they have to be narrative focused in ways that say, what is it? Rocky Rodent doesn't have to.
Thinking about Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy VI, on the SNES, or even, stuff like Phantasy Star, those games definitely had ending arcs, right? Like it wasn't just one screen, but outside of that genre, right? A lot of games did have these kind of nothing endings. And it wasn't until, the PlayStation where you started to see action game, Metal Gear Solid, right? Having a big dramatic acted ending.
Exactly. And the push for games as a kind of cinematic expression.
Yes, absolutely. You started to get more into those and even, your platforming games, your stuff like Crash Bandicoot or whatever, they'd have fun little cutscenes and they really put work into those endings that wasn't really
as opposed to us popping because, oh, hey, this Pac-Man screen, the interstitial is different than the one I saw 5 levels ago.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you made it to the one with the cherry or, whatever.
Oh, the ghost is now chase Pac-Man. He's really big. Look out, Pac-Man.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
My Pac-Man got that dog in him. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to think of these things relative over time, simply because more than anything, the real value is I can reflect on what everyone's freaking out about in gaming or tech discourse these days and be like, everybody calm down. Because really, very few issues we deal with in terms of technology ultimately end up being a new or proposing fundamentally different questions than society has ever asked itself anytime technology is introduced or aestheticized in a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've reached well, not I think video games have reached a point of sort of narrative complexity that people are able to have conversations that they used to have like in English class about books, about like the stories in games, which I think is interesting, right? Like that we all make fun of like it's a video game discourse and all these, you know, pseudo intellectuals on Twitter, but like I think it's neat that video games have gotten to that point of people actually able to have like philosophical conversations about them.
And I knew cats who did their master's thesis on fireworks as a kind of visual public cinema. And
Oh,
I'm
neat.
like,
Yeah,
if that's what
that's a
the
cool.
Academy endorses, then piss off, everybody. Let's look, not necessarily framing all games as art necessarily, but recognizing that some games certainly aspire to a level of art that others don't.
It
And
is honestly, I mean, not to, I know this is like such a tired debate, but it is to me pretty shocking how long it took and how many like, you know, seriously artistic, narrative, well thought out game experiences, decades and decades of them, we had to have before that became like a mainstream thing, right? Because these days it's like, yeah, everybody knows like video games genuinely try to have, not all of them, of course, but the medium certainly has meaningful, poignant narratives and artistic merit and all
And
this
like
stuff. Like,
critical spaces have gotten to the point where like, video games can win BAFTA awards, right?
right, but it's like unreal to me that that didn't happen until like a few years ago. That's like,
Well, exactly.
yeah, like it
Well, think
does
about it this
odd
way,
like how
though,
far behind.
because animated film has always had the impression that it's a less serious form, or that it's a novelty, or much like the Ninja Turtles, a cartoon. And what a lot of people don't seem to remember is that Disney's Beauty and the Beast, there was no best animated film category, so it was nominated for best
Best
feature
picture.
film, and then the next year, best animated film was its own
Yeah,
category.
that's a good point. And I mean, I think that's an interesting comparison of like, yeah, video games were kind of in that weird sort of like animated films where like the people that were into them obviously understood like there's a lot of like merit to this, but the
Well,
people
yeah. And the cool part
aesthetic.
about being ahead of the curve is like, well, you can also look at animated films from the 1970s or like what Ralph Bakshi is doing. And just because there wasn't a category for best animated feature doesn't mean that there weren't people still striving to do the kind of work that could theoretically win that award had it been offered, right?
Yeah, and I mean I guess they were thought of as weirdos the same way the people saying video games are art were thought of as weirdos by at least, you know, the mainstream media in like the 90s and 2000s. And now it's
And
like, well, of course, like you're weird for people are weird for not, you know, believing that now.
yeah, and I mean tying it all nice in a full circular bow, two of them, two circles on both sides of the bow. I think I break that up.
It's that
All that to
important.
say though is a lot of people think that four gentlemen wearing large trench coats and hats are weirdos, but the life you save may be your own, and the stranger you're kind to in a public place may very well be not just a Ninja Turtle, but a hero turtle.
That's true.
The choice is up to you. Kindness is always a choice, but it's an easy one with a world of difference that it unlocks, much like Fredo's Twitter account is currently unlocked. So remind the good people where they can find you, and floor is yours. You got anything to plug, anyone to shout out,
Yeah.
any beefs you want to settle?
No beefs. I'm, you know, very famously nice. But you can find me at Utwitily. That's Utwitily. Utwit, I love you. Always appreciate folks joining the Friends of Fredo. Happy to have been here. I don't really have anything to plug. I'll say check out Arlen's show, The Hell Zone. I've been on there times, and it's a blast of kind of reviewing a particular genre of movie that I think of as Hell Zone-y movies, of a sort of a lower budget apocalyptic kind of sci-fi action vibe movie.
He calls his viewers stuff. Mutants, and it's absolutely fitting.
Yes, freaks, mutants, absolutely, yes.
He very much has, like, I honestly think it's that kind of, like, same Ninja Turtles vibe. It's the best parts of cartoonishness.
Now, that's, I got to ask him about doing a Hellzone episode. I wonder if he would consider the Ninja Turtles movie to be like a Hellzone-y movie. I feel like it's kind of an edge case in the Hellzone, so I'm curious what his take on it is.
Well, we did do Double Dragon, which is a very Hellzone. You should definitely ask him about that. Also, pass along a message from his old pal Mayor. He should rename his show Arlen Down the House.
All right, I will let him know. but that's it for me. So Mayor, thanks for having me on. It's a blast as usual. Folks, check out Ninja Turtles. Check out the new show, Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I couldn't gush about it enough. And Cowabunga Collection and Fredo on Twitter.
Yeah, it's anyone you pick. In many ways, Fredo is the fifth Ninja Turtle.
No, that's Venus de Milo.
Okay, in many ways, Fredo is the sixth Ninja Turtle.
Yeah, there's probably a sixth Ninja Turtle. But yeah, Venus de Milo from the terrible live action show in the like mid 90s.
Wait, I do not remember this. I have a night of heavy Googling ahead of
me. All right, we're gonna not to go on too much of an aside, but yeah, we didn't talk about it, but they used some of the suits they had from the movies.
Oh, we got this suit. It's just sitting there.
And I think they used the suit because they had like different suits for the action sequences and for the more cinematic sequences. So they had like the action sequence suits that were like a lot more beat up and stuff, but they used and they looked bad. They looked bad up close because they were more flexible or whatever. That's what they used for this show. So like in stills and stuff.
The butterface of VFX.
Yeah, it looks really, a lot of people have probably seen like that meme picture of the Donatello actor screaming and you could like see his like mouth and nose inside the like mouth of the
turtle. I have not, but I am definitely looking up pictures of Donatello's big wide mouth for various reasons.
So don't watch that show. Watch other Ninja Turtle stuff.
You are an absolute treat of a man, a cup of stout on a cold winter's night.
Yeah.
Do you want to send our guests home happy with a wisdom, a slogan, or a beloved regionalism?
Yes. As you listen to whatever night you're listening, whatever day or night you're listening to this episode, the soup of the day that day will be turtle soup. Thank you so much, everyone.
The song goes out to a girl in full-size knee pads. Ready? I met a girl, her name was Molly. Took me to the skate park, taught me how to ollie. Stale dish fells, bone peak in her flock. Sick 900 like Tony Hawk. Pam Margera, Ryan Dunn. Skater girls are very fun. Punk rock skate queen, be with me. Punk rock skate queen, I love thee. Spend all day on half a pipe. We fell in love that very night. Ain't no syrup, cold command. She has a disdain for brands. Skate rock, punk queen, that's my wife. Skate rock, punk rock, that's my life.